Only smart people get up early enough to listen to the Francine Marie Show. So thanks for listening, smarty pants.
Oi, Billy! Oscar! Dave! Get up! Francine Marie Show's on!
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. Do you work in a dumb building or smart building? What about all this work from home we're seeing? Will you ever go back to that office, whatever it was? I want to find out this morning if smart buildings make green buildings greener or if green buildings make smart buildings smarter. You know who knows the answer to that? It's Tom Shercliffe, the co-founder of Intelligent Buildings. We can go to intelligentbuildings.com during the interview. Good morning, Tom, and happy birthday.
Good morning. Thank you. Nice to say that.
Yes, the last time that we spoke, you were the chairman of Envision Charlotte with the Smart City program. How'd that go?
That's right. Well, it went fantastic, and it's still going well. It was a big idea of attempting to connect all of the commercial buildings in the downtown area and monitor them together and kind of have a real big teamwork approach, and it worked quite well, and it's flourishing even today.
Oh, that's good. So you specialize in technology consulting for commercial real estate, as you mentioned. So do most people think of, when people think of technology, they think of the internet, they think of their smartphone. How much technology is in a commercial building?
Well, quite a bit, actually. I mean, everybody now can walk in a building and see a digital screen, and maybe there's Wi-Fi in the lobby, and there's these kind of personal experiences, and that's obvious. But what might not be so obvious if you walk into a big building in a downtown is that a very sophisticated air conditioning system, elevator system, the parking system, and it may sound obvious, but these are all IT network systems that are connected to the internet and they're programmable. And when you start to think about it, it does make sense for a large building to control all of those things would take a lot of technology.
And all I know is we always see the elevator guy. We call him the elevator guy. It's like the elevator's not working, call the elevator guy. But he's got his expertise.
Yes, but the elevator guy, as you call it, he comes and he doesn't just get out the wrench anymore. He gets out the laptop and he sees what's wrong with it and what the programming needs to be differently and how to optimize it and dial it in and program it. And that's just the elevator guy. There's only typically one contractor for one system. So you've got a lot of contractors and a lot of systems in any given building.
When you walk by these, when you drive by these new construction sites and you see everybody in these hard hats, it's like he's a contractor, he's a contractor, he's a... How many contractors does it take?
Well, that's a good point. Much like in construction, everybody realizes that there's some doing the framing, some doing the glass and windows, some doing the electrical systems. There are different specialists for every part of a construction job. Well, the same thing is true in an operating building. You have a different contractor for all the different systems. So we just named a few of them that are all separate. So the HVAC, the elevator, the lighting, the parking, the metering. You just look around, you'll start to realize all these different systems. And it's really fantastic because they're all programmable, they're all digital, but they all do take separate care and feeding.
So in broadcasting, if I were to put this in perspective, in broadcasting, the more jobs that we know how to do, the more valuable we are. Why isn't that the case? Why can't, you know, two or three people just get this building up and get it running?
Well, that is really a good point. There's been an effort to get to that more like that for a long time. And one of the challenges is there are such specialized systems. The skill set to make your elevator work properly are not the same as a sophisticated parking control system. However, some of those larger systems you're seeing emerge now, a phrase called the master systems integrator, who is able to at least look at two or three or four of the bigger system and program them to operate together. So let's just briefly imagine if I could pull into the parking deck of a large building and it recognized it was my car and it was me, and then it would automatically unlock the door for me to come into the building And then it knew I was on the 35th floor and the elevator would be waiting to take me to that floor. Now, that's a little cliche, but we actually have customers that are doing that now. And that is involving multiple systems being programmed together to create an experience, a safer situation, or better for public health, or whatever the driving motivation is.
Well, let's go to cyber security, because you know in the spy movie, right, in Jason Bourne movies, they're locking that building down, right? Elevators are coming down. Even your old shows like Get Smart, right? Gates were coming down, alarms were going off, guards were running around. What kind of cybersecurity do we have these days?
Well, that's an interesting question. By the way, those movies were prophetic, because now all these buildings are computerized, they are internet connectable, and they are typically done so by a value chain that doesn't really specialize in IT. One of the challenges is that the IT department of your corporation or your organization typically doesn't have very much, if anything, to do with your building system and the things that happen in the building. So the cybersecurity of these pretty important systems in terms of safety and efficiency and experience are left to this fragmented community we described earlier, who, again, don't have a lot of IT experience. So I don't want to be alarmist, but there is a situation and a condition in America's, really in the global real estate community, where you've got lots of these very sophisticated building control systems that have computer, software, and internet connections that really are left to their own standards on a contractor-by-contractor basis as to whether they have passwords or whether they're backed up or whether they're using the current software. A lot of these things we all do on our smartphones today need to be done in all of these systems, but also they need to be done consistently across an entire portfolio. It's a real challenging situation, and one we have been knee-deep in for years now.
So if a building is smart, it can be hacked.
Well, yes, but I'd like to clarify that smart is a sort of nebulous term. I really say if it's digital, it can be hacked, meaning this has been happening since the 1980s, when building control systems became digital or became computer operated. So most people think if I don't do a smart building, then I'm fine. Well, no, I would say if you're in a building that was built or renovated since the 80s, you have a problem. So I don't want people to be fooled to think if they don't do anything progressive or smart that they're fine. It's really an industry-wide condition as a result of the way these systems have been built for almost 40 years now.
Okay. So what year did we start getting smarter with building commercial entities?
Yeah, that's really a good question. If we stipulate, you know, for 40 years, we've had computerized building systems. Now the question is, well, smart is really only a matter of having a plan, connecting those things together, creating experiences for yourself. And also, you ask a question that drives an important point is, what is smart? And we like to really simplify that down and say smart is whatever you're trying to do with your building already, meaning if you want a healthier environment or a more productive environment or a more sustainable building or a more sustainable organization, that's what you're already trying to do. And what smart does, just like with any technology and smart buildings, it allows you to get to those goals in a less expensive, faster, and more secure way. So the measurements don't really change with a smart building. That's just a way to get you there faster, whether you're counting carbon or money or kilowatt hours or productivity or these days, public health measurement. Whatever those goals are, a smart building can get you there in a much better way.
I wonder how nosy these smart buildings can be when it comes to like an employees, like your cubicles. Are cameras everywhere? I'm not an IT person, but I would say just about cameras are everywhere, right?
Yeah, then that's a good example where the situation you described is not a burden of the smart building world. It's a burden of your organization or your employer or whatever, or your public space whatever they decide to do, with whether it's cameras or tracking or your security for your access control in and out of the doors and so forth, that is up to whoever owns and manages the building. And so you could have a very, very smart building with no cameras. If you said smart to you was more about a public health environment or more about a sustainability environment, you could have no cameras. And on the other hand, you could have lots of them. So what is the building owner, manager, and tenant, they are the ones in power to make those kind of policies.
Got it. You said public health. Let's talk about the pandemic. There's a lot of smart technology coming out now. It takes your temperature.
Yeah, and I will tell you, well, it's, you know, what's interesting about that in terms of smart buildings is, in some ways, it, obviously it's a new priority, but it can upend maybe other priorities, because you might have certain things to help a building be safer for public health during the pandemic. It might be less energy efficient, like more outside air, more lighting, more of these kind of things. And so that can be less energy efficient, but better for public health. And certainly a smart building, and let's don't even say smart for a second, let's just say a digital building, right? All these digital systems can be harnessed to create what we call use cases for public health. So let's just say everybody's, you know, heard of social distancing and touchless experiences, right? So if I were going to walk into a building that would make me feel more comfortable, I might want to simply show my credentials or my security card, and the door would open for me. And as we alluded to earlier, maybe now that I've had the door open for me without touching it, the elevator already knows what floor I'm going to. So I just continue to walk and I don't touch the elevator, right? That's digital building systems sort of put in a smart way that gives me a touchless experience. Now, here's the other thing. We talk about something like a social distancing, but we still want personal privacy. That's something that has to be reconciled, because to have social distancing, I might need to have either cameras or occupancy sensors that tell anyone, really, not just management, if you will, but anyone, that there's too much density in an area. Well, how did I know that? I had to have some kind of occupancy sensing, some kind of ability to tell if there were too many people in a certain area. Well, that makes you uncomfortable, maybe privacy-wise, 100 days ago. And today, you might really welcome that. So getting back again to what are we trying to solve for and what is the technology pointed at? The digital systems and the smart building systems are a very big part of the public health environment today and how we can all be more comfortable returning to and thriving in our buildings.
If you're just not tuning in, yep, that's Tom Shercliffe. He's the co-founder of Intelligent Buildings. We can go right now, intelligentbuildings.com, to find out what all these smart and dumb buildings are all about. I was looking at apartments this weekend and condos, and do you know, well, you probably already know, that some of these smart condo situations are $35,000 to $5,000 a month. Well, there's some $10,000, $15,000, right, and $20,000. But they've got smart technology.
Yeah, and that when you go from the commercial environment into the residential environment, that's a really big change, because you've gone from an environment where a property management company generally is controlling the experience, or the owner of the building or the employer, and they are doing all that to a private residence where you're moving more into an individually controlled environment, which is a lot of times about convenience and experience and that kind of thing. Now, what you will find in those type of residential environments is that the common area experience can be more, obviously more like a commercial environment, where they may have social distance requirements, they may have cybersecurity requirements, they may have experience, different kind of common area technology than you would have inside of your personal residence.
Right. And speaking of home, many of us haven't left it. We're working from home.
Right.
We want to get out. Or do we want to get out, right? Some of us love it. You know, some of us can't deal with it too well. But will we go back to the building that we came from?
Yeah, I I think that is a certainty. Everybody agrees that the system was sort of shocked into accepting telework and remote classrooms. And we've got students at home, we've got employees and workers at home. That has added a significant dimension to learning and to working. And I don't think that's going to change. But what the consensus is, while we don't know the exact numbers, it's not that people are never going to go back to the office or back to the mall or back to these commercial buildings. They will. So those of us in the smart building community, we're preparing for that and preparing for the new normal, whatever that level is that returns. And I do think this is a pendulum swing conversation. You're not going to go from everybody being at, nobody being at home to everybody being at home. It's going to swing back to the middle. And it is somewhat analogous to 9/11, where there was this conversation that we'll never build tall buildings again. Well, that wasn't true. We've certainly done that. But you still take your shoes off the airport. So there is going to be some vestige of this that will carry on into our publicly accessible and commercial buildings. And we're working towards what that is and trying to be prepared, because really the fact that nobody's clear about it is really an important thing for a smart building. It has to be flexible to reconfigure the space, change the systems, how they work together. We talked about the touchless entry and the social distancing. That may get more intense or less intense, but we've got to be able to change and adapt to this.
We are trying to adapt. You know, as human beings, we do not like change very well. We want things to remain the same, and they can't do that. So, okay, so I'm going to be nosy. What's the smartest building that you know of on this planet? It could be here in Charlotte, Atlanta. Who's like way above the curve?
Well, you know, the beauty is in the eyes of the beholder.
Right.
So that's a hard question. If somebody was really driving towards, let's say, a software company, their biggest measurement was productivity of their employees. And if they were in a building that had lots of outside air, lots of light, and their productivity was very high, they would say, wow, we've got a great experience for our employees, and they are really producing. Another one might say that, hey, our measure is sustainability. Our carbon footprint is very low, and look at this, and that is our measurement. And they're very successful. And we know of companies who are in a competitive situation with attracting and retaining employees, so they want it to be the coolest experience possible. And if their retention rate and their hire rate was good, they would say that is the smartest building. And finally, as we've said multiple times here, now public health is really the measure. So it's people returning to the building. So there are many, many of them out there. But I would say after doing this for 16 years, we've been through the phases of the different priorities. And it doesn't mean that any of the issues went away, but when we started the business, energy efficiency was the most important thing. And
right.
A few years later, and we were 2004, and then a few years later, it was carbon, not specifically operational efficiency and energy, but carbon. But then when 2008 came, it was all about money, period. It was just stay afloat with the financial crisis. And then, as I mentioned, productivity and then experience were a big deal. And I can tell you with certainty right now, all of our commercial building customers are 100% focused on public health. All those other things are still in the conversation, but public health is the priority. And that's to summarize smart buildings. It would be, what is your priority and the list of things that you're trying to accomplish? And then let's point technology at those priorities, and those are the measurements, not how many green lights are flashing and how many pieces of equipment you have in your building, but how have I done on your priorities as an organization?
Right. Wow. Yeah, everybody's got different priorities, so whatever floats your boat, as they say. I want a building that I can work in that looks kind of like that Star Trek situation where you walk up to the elevator, boom, it opens, right? If you want to walk across the street or go see grandma, you just get on the teleporter and it takes you there. You don't have to get on a plane.
I'm taking you as an experienced person, and we can make a smart building for you.
Oh, and that brings me to my last question, and thank you for sticking with me this long. How can someone get into this smart business situation? So IT seems to be the foundation. So talk to us. If we were just graduating, or we wanted a new career, or we got furloughed and laid off, or we just want something new, what does this field look like in IT?
Yeah, it's a good question. And what is happening is that the traditional real estate environment, if you think about who that includes, architects, engineers, general contractors, property managers, facility managers, they are really needing and starting to look for talent that can understand IT. I mean, just IT like we all know, computers and networks, the internet. And so if you're somebody that has those IT skills, you would do well to learn about how real estate development and management works and go apply your IT skills to that environment, because it's continuing to change very quickly, and it is a really good opportunity, and they're really looking for IT skill sets that can understand the culture and the environment of real estate, not the typical IT environment.
Got it. And contractors, minority contractors, contractors in general, is it a fair playing ground out there? I know that's not your field of expertise, but from what you're seeing, is the landscape changing just a little bit?
I think it is. I think there's a lot of awareness about that, and it's a frequent area of conversation. And I would say the same thing, especially for minority contractors and diversity inclusiveness. I would encourage a little focus and a little increased understanding of the information technology, which is really lacking in the real estate, commercial real estate environment. And I think that is a real edge, and I think it'll make a real difference to that end.
The world is our oyster, and Tom Shercliffe is the co-founder of Intelligent Buildings. We could go right now. It's intelligentbuildings.com. Happy birthday. Go party. Go do your thing. Oh, you got to give a shout out to your partner, to your business partner.
That's right. Yeah, Rob Murkison is my co-founder and business partner in 2004, and really it's been a great experience working together.
Well, it's been a great experience with you. You'll have to come back and keep us smarter on these buildings, okay?
Always fun to talk to you. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to the Francine Marie Show. We're popping out for a quick cup of tea, but we'll be right back.
This is my jam and jelly, y'all, on the Francine Marie Show. Spread that show out, girl. Spread it out.
Please, please do not harm us. We have come to your planet for one thing, the Francine Marie Show. It's the only content we can digest.